Julian P. Van Winkle III sits at Churchill Downs in his signature bourbon barrel patterned bow tie, casually passing around a flask of Weller 12 as horses thunder past. This man, who once wore fake rotten teeth to meet his daughter's in-laws just for laughs, carries America's whiskey legacy on his shoulders. He wears the same family ring his father and grandfather wore before him, a golden circle connecting three generations of bourbon makers. What started as a simple profile transformed into something far deeper, a meditation on fathers and sons, on what we inherit and what we choose to preserve when everything else crumbles. The timing was uncanny. Thompson entered Julian's world just as cancer forced Julian to face his mortality, while Thompson himself waited to learn if he would become a father. Pappy Van Winkle bourbon has transcended its humble origins to become cultural mythology, with bottles fetching thousands and earning devotees from Anthony Bourdain to Sean Brock. Yet beneath the cult status lives a profoundly human story of a man who rebuilt his family's shattered legacy one barrel at a time, turning loss into liquid gold through sheer stubborn devotion. Kentucky's greatness flows from limestone-filtered water that removes iron, ruining whiskey's color while strengthening horse bones. Geography becomes destiny through ancient bedrock. Drive east of Louisville and narrow lanes reveal grand estates or haunting ruins. Four Corinthian columns mark where Green Hills Mansion once hosted derby parties, a reminder that fortunes crumble. At Churchill Downs, America displays itself. Nervous owners in private boxes, celebrities under oversized hats, new money buying status, old money maintaining it. Thoroughbred magnificence traces through centuries of breeding to legendary sires like Northern Dancer and Secretariat. That same obsession fuels bourbon. Time transforms harsh white dog into complex amber liquid through years with charred oak. Julian's grandfather revolutionized bourbon using wheat instead of rye, creating smoother spirit. His motto, always fine bourbon, wasn't marketing. Stitzel Weller barreled whiskey at lower proof than required, costing more in taxes, but making better bourbon. The Stitzel Weller Distillery stands as both shrine and wound in Julian's life, a 53-acre tract where his grandfather built his bourbon empire. Pappy opened it on Derby Day 1935, overseeing every detail from the world's largest still to the white-columned office with its Monticello-inspired rotunda. Five brass keys hung on the white door, representing bourbon's five stages. Fine bourbon ought to make itself, Pappy would say, with just a little help from Mother Nature and Father Time. Those white columns became intertwined with Pappy's image, the place where he ate frankfurters without buns and took afternoon naps. Here, teenage Julian had his revelation about bourbon while fixing barrels one summer. When a hose soaked him in whiskey, he tasted it and thought, "Damn, this is really good." That flavor became his North Star. Unlike most Kentucky distillers who inherited family businesses, Pappy built his from scratch. When corporations began swallowing small producers, Pappy refused to sell, even testifying before Congress about industry price fixing. But what Pappy preserved, Julian's father couldn't hold. The bourbon market collapsed in the 1960s as vodka rose. James Bond made martinis sophisticated, while bourbon became what fathers drank. Julian's father, a World War II tank captain and Princeton football player, couldn't grasp why the world had changed. Unable to fend off relatives siding with minority shareholders, he surrendered rather than destroy family relationships. "We didn't get cash," Julian explained. "We got Norton Simon stock." When the stock plummeted to $2, Julian believes it contributed to his father's prostate cancer. His father died in 1981, the shame of losing the distillery a wound that never healed. Most men both compete with and imitate their fathers, craving approval while fearing disappointment. Captain Julian P. Van Winkle Jr., a 6'4" former Princeton football player, led Company A of the 44th Tank Battalion through the Pacific during World War II. At 30, he landed on Light in 1944, naming his tank Old Fitz after his bourbon. During a frontal assault at Breakneck Ridge, he was shot through his hand and stomach while directing his men outside his tank. Even from the Pacific, his letters home discussed distillery news. Julian became a more patient, involved father, though he deeply admired his dad's strength. His daughter, Chenault, remembers holding back laughter when he tried enforcing rules. Discipline didn't come naturally to him. Thompson weaves his own father's story throughout, revealing his alcoholism for the first time. His father found sobriety through meetings, enabling his most vital work. When cancer took him at 58, Thompson felt his father had unfulfilled potential, driving him to work maniacally for 2 decades. These parallel stories reveal how we carry our parents' dreams and disappointments like invisible weights. After his father died in 1981, Julian inherited 4 years of experience and a ruined legacy. 2 years later, he bought a dilapidated Lawrenceburg, Kentucky bottling plant, 22 miles south of Horse Country, deep in moonshine territory. The facility had a leaking roof, broken equipment, and raccoons shitting in the elevator. Julian spent days fixing an old 1970 Dodge truck that constantly broke down. Those wilderness years nearly destroyed him. Julian went almost $1 million in debt, taking loans and spending his inheritance to keep old Rip Van Winkle bottled. He wasn't betting on a bourbon boom. He was simply willing to go down with the ship. During lean years, the family maintained appearances. Sissy brought sandwiches for the kids to eat in the car before entering the country club pool. Julian survived thanks to people who remembered his grandfather, like Jimmy Russell, Wild Turkey's master distiller, who sent mechanics when equipment failed. Russell embodied the old bourbon tribe's neighborly instinct, a spirit vanishing in today's world of brand managers and private equity. Everything changed when Diageo's Patty called about unloading bourbon barrels for $200 each. Julian recognized what they had, the taste of his youth, his family's legacy of fine-aged weeded bourbon. After convincing a banker to extend credit, he bought every barrel he could afford and created Van Winkle Family Reserve, putting Pappy's picture on the label. Julian had survived by making his own time. For 15 years since partnering with Buffalo Trace, Julian worried, would the new whiskey honor his grandfather's name? In the tasting room, examining bottles of 15-year-old raw Pappy, he made a revealing Freudian slip, calling the Buffalo Trace bourbon Stitzel Weller. The bourbon industry demands predicting America's mood a decade ahead. He checked the distillation date, April 22, 2002, precisely when he was negotiating the Buffalo Trace deal. Upon tasting, his anxiety vanished. The whiskey triggered the same memories as the original. "This is back the way that it used to be," he said. Julian and his son, Preston, taste barrels together in joyous collaboration, Julian often crediting Preston with the better palate. He selects barrel 107 for the family, the first single-barrel Pappy bottled just for the Van Winkles in over 40 years. By making weeded bourbon the most sought-after in the world, Julian has created a living monument more meaningful than marble gravestones. Though not sentimental about visiting graves, Julian often thinks about his father and grandfather, wishing they could see what happened to their premium bourbon. Unfortunately, they were 40 to 60 years too early, he reflects, but sure, they would be proud of me. His daughters now run Pappy & Company, selling everything from needlepoint belts to barrel-aged maple syrup. Julian thrives around a table. At his Victorian, Michigan summer home, where Pappy vacationed since the 1930s, he mixes his signature Vanhattan with half rye, half bourbon, Carpano Antica vermouth, Luxardo cherry juice, and Orindi bitters. He and Sissy have created an enviable life, using success to become fully realized versions of themselves. Under candlelight on the porch, you have to wonder, what should success purchase? More success or a life worth living? Once nicknamed Silent Dan, Julian has transformed into someone who moves confidently in the sophisticated world of high-end spirits. His daughter Chenault recalls how he once struggled to express love, making his recent emotional outburst over her magazine cover achievement all the more remarkable. Unlike distilleries selling manufactured stories, Julian's biography gives him genuine legitimacy. He's not a dynasty's crowned king. He's someone who rebuilt a piece of his family's whiskey business after it was sold. His whiskey represents a private promise to return to his grandfather's success and soothe his father's pain. When Thompson's daughter Wallace is born, he wears his father's old shirt and hat when holding her. He gives a special bottle of 15-year-old Pappy to his uncle Will, who had rushed to the hospital as proxy for Thompson's deceased father. Weeks later, Julian sends a hand-labeled bottle bearing Wallace's name and birthdate, a gift waiting on a time when its presence is required to properly convey what a moment means. Time is bourbon's essential ingredient. When we sip aged bourbon, we're experiencing a message from the past. As Wallace grows, Thompson hopes she'll understand both the beauty of their Southern heritage and its complicated history. He wants to pass down his father's sense of wonder, his belief that someone else's joy was never your sadness. Like Julian preserving his grandfather's bourbon legacy, we all seek to distill the best of what we've inherited, creating something that, with proper aging and care, might just make the trip through time.